And our guest, William Forstchen, this hour as we talk about EMPs. We'll take your calls with him in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. William Forstchen with us. William, before we go to calls, let's take a few moments here to talk about your other work, Pillar to the Sky, about the space elevator concept. How would that work? Explain that.
Oh, it's now I'm on the fun part. Somebody listening and commented that, gosh, the last hour scared the daylights out of folks with the EMP issue. And
it's real.
My latest book came out a week ago. It's called Pillar to the Sky. And it's about building a space elevator, which I know sounds sci-fi to some people. The idea is to string a cable from geosynchronous orbit, 23,000 miles up, down to the equator. Once locked in place, the centrifugal force of the Earth's rotation will keep the cable rigid. Then you simply hook on an elevator, and you're on your way to the stars. You know, your news item, or as you started into your program, you were talking with a noted space historian. I've met that gentleman
before. Robert Zimmerman, great guy.
I think the world of that guy. And he was talking about the prospect of global, what was actually the company is calling it Outer Net rather than Internet.
That's right.
Of placing hundreds of satellites. Google is rumored to be looking at doing the same thing. For the cost of that, I'd love to see Google build a space elevator or a private firm like Google.
They could afford that.
They could afford it. But once you have that space elevator in place, think of the communications equipment you can strap to that, which in fact would also create a global internet, along with a global supply of energy by having solar panels hooked to it and then piping the energy back down to the Earth's surface. A space elevator would revolutionize not only how we go into space, but what we could bring back from space, meaning communications and energy.
How long would it take for the elevator to go all the way up?
Well, it's actually one of those things you build from the top down. You use gravity to build it. The expensive part would be the initial launching of spools of wire made out of C60, also known as carbon nanotubes or buckyballs, which have the tensile and the compression strength to handle the loads. It will be the steel of the 21st century. In fact, you and I remember we talked once about, gosh, there's companies getting ready to manufacture that, and you actually knew somebody involved in it.
Yeah.
This will be the way steel transformed the world in the 19th century. Carbon nanotubing will transform the world to the 21st century, enabling us to build towers going all the way out, starting at geosync, lower the wire down, hook it to the equator. In fact, once you've built the first one, the building of the others would be cheap. I believe that within the lifetime of our children, maybe even your lifetime and mine, we could see the world looking like a wagon wheel with spokes. Those towers could provide everything we need in terms of communications, but even more important, limitless energy that's harvested from the limitless energy of the sun flowing past us every second.
Wouldn't the wire burn up as it came down through the atmosphere from space?
It would have a thruster unit attached to it as it's being lowered down through the atmosphere. And unlike what we saw in the movie Gravity, which is my favorite movie of last year, remember, a spacecraft is orbiting, circling the Earth at 17,000 miles an hour. And as it hits the upper atmosphere, the energy that's being absorbed as it hits the molecules of the upper atmosphere heat up. This is simply coming straight back down without that velocity of 17,000 miles an hour. So it would not burn up. It would be a tricky job getting it in. And I'm not saying this would be an easy project. But then again, in 1961, when Jack Kennedy said, let's go to the moon, we only had 15 minutes of flight time in space total. We didn't have the rockets. We didn't have the equipment. We didn't have the technology. But the challenge, we went out, we built it. 8 years and 3 months later, we were on the moon. We could do the same thing with space elevators within the next decade.
How big would the elevator be?
Well, your initial wire, the first wire down would be rather small. It would be a couple of millimeters. But once you got the first wire in place, you hook onto it what I call spinners. The way they used to make cables on suspension bridges, you get the first wire across, you spin other wires onto it. Once you've built it up to a sufficient diameter that can handle the weight load, you know, I remember the first time I went into one of these hotels that had one of those glass elevators that went straight up for 50 stories up. And even though I'm a pilot, it still kind of freaked me out. You know, you feel like you're hanging in space. Those same type of elevators hooked to this cable, it would take several days to get out the geosync, but it'd be one heck of a ride going up. Think of the view.
All right, let's take some calls here, William, for you, okay? Let's go to Pat in Minneapolis, Minnesota, east of the Rockies. Hey, Pat, thanks for calling.
About the grid, I've heard the figure $2 billion would protect us from most of the potential EMP type, I don't know if it's only the sun or only the missiles. But I'll bet other countries already have such protection. I'll bet Norway does. I'll bet Germany does. I'll bet there are other countries that have already done this work on their grids.
You know, that's an excellent point, ma'am. In fact, the further north you go in terms of latitude, the more susceptible a country is to standard solar storms, which trigger the aurora borealis. Norway and Canada, in fact, experienced a major blowout back in the late 1980s. So countries in extreme northern latitudes tend to have a more beefed-up grid than those of us in mid-latitudes. Your number is pretty well on the mark. Quite a few people point out it's not like we have to go out tomorrow and do this massive rebuild of our system. Just a simple replacement of equipment, but upscaling it across a span of 10 to 15 years would do a rather good job of hardening the system up. But there are key things that we could be addressing right now for even less than the $2 billion that you're talking about. We're talking about several dollars per American spanned out across several years would be a major, very smart defensive move.
Yeah, it sure would. John is in Boston's spa area of New York, first-time caller. Hey, John, thank you.
Hey, good afternoon. Well, good evening or good morning, actually, for everyone here. My question was, you know, with the electrical grid, how come we don't spend money just to shield it like we do with the military in the first place, and we wouldn't have to worry about it? And second off, I wonder if you could touch on some of the alternate EMP devices that are known out there today that I don't know how far you want to get into that, but we all know that, you know, they could be put on top of missiles and non-nuclear. If you could go give on something on that first, appreciate it.
All right, fine.
The gentleman points out a couple of good things. I mean, it's not just nukes that can generate an EMP. Tactical battlefield use is becoming common. All sides around the world are looking at it, and I don't want to encourage anybody here, but if one poked around on the internet, they could find some information on actual access by civilians for EMP generators that could create a small localized effect. And I don't want to speculate there as to how that could be used for various nefarious activities. As to cost, yeah, all of us have the same question. Anybody that's involved in this issue asks, why have we not been thinking about this ever since the early 1960s when both we and the Soviets first tested nuclear weapons in relationship to EMP generation and was, oh my gosh, this is infinitely more powerful than we thought it would be. We have been blind to this for the last 40 years. I hope we straighten it out before we have to pay a terrible price.
Well, I hope so too. I really do. I mean, but you feel something impending, don't you, William? Whatever it might be.
Not to run that past me again.
You're feeling something, right? That it could happen?
Well, I'm a historian, and so are you, George. I mean,
yeah.
We both study history, and there were a lot of people walking around on September the 10th, 2001, who were saying, you know, if somebody could seize a plane rather than just hijack it, ram it into a building. Or on December 6, 1941, saying, if somebody put five or six aircraft carriers together into a strike group, they could completely annihilate a major military base. They were dismissed, and then 2 days later, people said, oh, my God, you were right. I have a terrible feeling on the possibility of this type of thing happening. It's one of the reasons I wrote the book Pillar, because after discussing such a negative thing, I want to at least offer some hope for the future with space technology.
And I think there is hope for the future.
I do, too.
As bumpy as it's going to be. When you wrote One Second After, how many people in Congress read it, do you know?
I was inspired to write One Second After by my friend Newt Gingrich. Newt and I have been friends for 20 years. It was a conversation with him that triggered it. The day after we had the conversation, he sent me to see a remarkable man, Congressman Roscoe Bartlett, who represented the district out of Frederick, Maryland, until he was gerrymandered out. And one of only two PhDs in the hard sciences in Congress. And Congressman Bartlett laid the challenge to me. He said, Bill, the problem with EMP is it has no constituency. And if you write a book that maybe triggers interest in that, what you should do as an American citizen. I was enraged when about a month ago, I believe it was the Washington Post, printed a very sarcastic article about Congressman Bartlett as if he was some sort of eccentric living up in the mountains of Western, now West Virginia. The problem we have with Congress is we need more PhDs rather than lawyers and car salesmen. We need intelligent people in Congress who can take these issues seriously.
We sure do. West of the Rockies, Roger, state of Washington. Hey, Raj, thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for this subject. I've got some pretty strong feelings about that. I read something on the internet a couple of years ago about the military shielding some of their power facilities with high-density concrete domed structures with a heavy metal cladding deeply grounded so that an EMT would somewhat be scattered scattered because of the dome and would be bled off the ground rather than destroying the infrastructure that we already have there. What do we need to do about that?
What can we do about it, William?
Well, what this gentleman's referring to is Faraday cages.
Big ones.
I urge folks who are listening to the program, once you're off the air today, just simply get on a search engine, Google, who I hope one day built a space elevator, Google up Faraday cage. It can be constructed quite easily. In fact, we all have a Faraday cage right in our homes. It's called a microwave oven. That is a Faraday cage that, if you didn't have that built into your microwave, your brain will be guacamole in the kitchen after a couple of days from the emissions coming off of that. It's a very simple thing to construct. The military does have key equipment based inside of Faraday cages, like the gentleman described. We as civilians can also do the same thing for crucial electronics.
You know, William, as we look at this, is there a department within government, known or unknown to most of us, that is actively working on this and dealing with the possibility of an attack or a grid problem?
Oh, gosh. It's a pretty depressing question.
Oh.
Declassified, and again, I had to get my disclaimer once every hour. I strictly am in the declassified, unclassified realm. Yeah, there's another bill going through Congress yet again, and maybe this time it will get through the Senate and finally passed. So my answer is no. I want to believe that there are some intelligent people out there who, behind the scenes, are doing a better job of preparation than what we are aware of at this moment.
Next up, we have Irondale, Alabama. Caller Jay is with us. Jay, thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks. As usual, another great show.
Thank you.
You have been a good friend overnight when I can't sleep. This subject has been one that many people have been talking about, and as usual, the Coast to Coast listeners are always on top of everything. And with all the doom and gloom out there, if you're prepared for a week, 2 weeks, you're going to have to psychologically rewire your own brain. And the fact of the matter is, what can you do without electricity? The answer is nothing. The fact of the matter is that people are going to need to learn to do for themselves. And you gave a scenario of 90% of the people within a year would be deceased. They'd die, right? That's what you said?
That's right.
Yes, sir.
Well, when you tell people this, they go, oh, my God, and they freak out. Well, you better look to who your source is. And there's only so much that the arm of the flesh can do. And what you're talking about tonight, you're talking about an office in Congress. They're not interested in something like this. They're not interested in rewiring or rehardening. And I know this, it would cost less to do to harden everything electricity-wise than this so-called stimulus, which turned out to be another scam. But the fact of the matter is, if you don't have a way, the big in an emergency, the biggest thing is clean water. If you do not have a portable way, as the military does, clean water, you're gonna be in a real bad position amongst other things, because the rats, the two-legged and the four-legged rats, one of the things that you have to prepare for. And like I've said before, it would be less than 24 hours. New York City, and we've seen how Hollywood has been telling us over the years that sooner or later, it's not a question of if, but when. Thank you, Coast to Coast. Desvidaniya.
You were right on.
That's a great caller. He's hit a couple of key points. Let me emphasize one thing. I express cynicism at the federal level. But the state level, things are moving. I'm in North Carolina. I think we're going to see something happen this year to start hardening our grid. There's a group known called the NOAA Foundation. You can find them online. NOAA Foundation out of Charlotte that's working on this. Secondly, this gentleman points out the key thing. Number one priority, water. Go to any camping supply store. You can get a basic portable water filtration system down, I think, at 1 micron. Doesn't work quite that well with petrochemical pollution. But your key things about bacteria, waterborne bacteria, $25. Keep that in your closet. Have what I call a God bag. Get out of Dodge bag. In that, just have several days' worth of supplies. My daughter's at a college 200 miles away. She has one in her car so she can get home. Third, as the gentleman pointed out, even just having basic supplies. Look at the storm that hit the East Coast last week. People were panicking over bread and milk yet again.
Oh, they always do, don't they, William?
It's almost comic. I mean, I lived for a while in northern New England where we were used to it. If need be, we were cut off for a week or two. That's fine with us.
William, stay with us. We're going to come back and take some final phone calls with you in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, I invite you to watch our television program, Internet-based, Beyond Belief. It's taking the world by storm. How do you watch it? 10 days free. Simply go to this website. Here you go. www.beyondbelief.com. It's that simple. And not only do you watch the show for 10 days at no cost to you, you can look at all the other videos as much as you can. Beyondbelief.com. Just a guess, William Forstgen, but what are we more apt to get? The EMP attack from a rogue nation, or an X-flare that hits us from the sun?
I get asked that a lot, and mathematically, 100% probability, we will be hit by a CME at some point. Statistically, they estimate about every 75 years, a major one hits. We're way overdue. Again, reference to the Carrington event, 1859, which if it happened today, you and I would not be talking for quite a few years to come.
No.
It would blow out the global grid.
It really would.
Military attack, I couldn't tell you.
What about satellites that are up there at the time that the CME hits?
Most of the hardware that is up there is heavily, heavily protected and can even be aligned a certain way to reduce the risk factor. because the cost of putting a satellite into space using chemical rockets rather than a space elevator, well, it's in the hundreds of millions of dollars. So they really beef those things up before they set them up.
Back to the calls we go. Bill is in Baltimore, Maryland, and he's on the air with us. Hi, Bill.
Hi, George. Hi, William. How are you doing tonight?
Good. Thank you.
I wanted to correct some information, basically, William said about the transformer scenario.
Sure.
Where they were shooting the transformers up. Those transformers most likely wouldn't blow up because they have full-level gauges on them that it will trip it. They have winding temperature gauges on them that will trip it if the winding temperature goes up. If it's a loss of oil flow, it will trip them because that's part of their load rate. It gives them their load rating. So I got 42 years in the utility industry. That's not a problem. I could get one of those transformers back in 3 days.
Okay, what would you think, you know, shooting it up, what would be the problem? What do you think they were trying to do?
Well, they shoot the expansion tank because that's the thinnest metal on the transformer or the radiators, okay? Some radiators are shaped different. Some are like, looks like a cooler, but some of them are like just metal fins, like. And if you put a bullet, we've had them shoot right through them, and they have butterfly valves. You can shut them off. You get an oil level alarm. You get an oil level trip on some of them. And this is all on a SCADA system, so they know right away something's wrong. Okay. And they'll have a trouble man in there, and all you have to do is go shut off butterflies, valves on the radiator, and it's closed off.
A lot of butterfly valves, huh, if you get a lot of...
So the transformers aren't the scenario you have to worry about. The EMP and the sunspots, we had to deal with them, too, because... We found out that depending on the makeup of the earth that the transformer was sitting on determined the effect of the magnetic field on the transformer. It's like where you had rocky formations and all, they were more vulnerable to that mm-hmm. type of attack, basically. The big problem that you have and the weakness on the is the transmission system. I could take out, you give me 250 men and these charges that these demolition companies use to take down buildings, these shape charges, I could take out five towers and wipe out a complete tower line.
And there's nobody there to guard them, is there?
Huh?
There's nobody there to guard those towers.
No, they're in the middle of nowhere. I mean, we have a nuclear power plant, supplies 66% of the power, has 35 miles of tower line, 550,000 volts, going to a distribution station 35 miles away. I could take out five of them. The conductors are so large on this. If you take five towers, it's a domino effect. It'll bust every insulator all the way back to the distribution station.
If you just take out one, how long does that take?
It's going to be in trouble.
That is. All right, Bill, I'll let you react to all this. Go ahead, Bill.
Exceptional caller. Thank you, sir. I was not saying that the transformers would blow. You're right. The SCADAs would actually trip them off. But the point is, it would still take the power grid down for days, perhaps weeks. And the gentleman also definitely hit the key point. It's not the generators themselves that we have to be concerned about, even with EMP and CME. It is the distribution system. And he presents a scary scenario.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you just blow out four or five of these high transmission
line towers,
and you got the whole grid going down for an area.
And how long would it take to string wire back up to get things going again? Who knows, right?
By that time, you'd have a major panic. I went through a scenario like that in northern Indiana when I was in grad school 20 years ago, where the major transmission lines were blown out by an ice storm. Some areas, it took a month. But that was a local event. We had help coming in from all over the Midwest. Imagine, as he said, 250 well-trained people, it could blow out the grid of the United States.
Why hasn't anybody done that before?
That's the scary thing about talking about this on your show.
Let's hope it doesn't happen this week because of this.
Please, no.
I don't think it will, but I mean, realistically, it doesn't take rocket science to figure this out. If you're a low-grade terrorist, you just hit some of these little spots here. That's not a lot of planning to do, but why hasn't it been done?
Again, I was lucky. That would be on September 10th, 2001. People were expressing concern. They were saying, why hasn't it been done? It happened the next day.
And it happened the next day.
Yeah. Let's hope it doesn't happen this week, because they might be looking at you and me.
Well, it's not going to be us. Forrest in Lubbock, Texas. Hello, Forrest. Go ahead.
Hey, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call, for bringing to light many things that a lot of people have been talking about since that report for that genie doctor, that judge came on Fox and was talking about it for the last two Saturdays.
Right.
But I was wondering if this EMP hit, would it cause problems with these vehicles that have computers running the vehicles?
Good question.
I've always heard that that was possible, and I didn't know, thought you guys might know the answer to that.
Good question. It would fry those computers, William, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Look up on, it still might be up on YouTube, just look up Ford Taurus EMP. I haven't looked for it recently, but I know it was up there 6 months ago, showing a Ford Taurus being exposed to an EMP. I do not own an electric car for that type of reason. And look what happened in Atlanta last month, where 1 inch of ice and snow, all it takes is even just 2 or 3% of the cars to go out of control or skid or break down, and you have gridlock across the entire major metropolitan area. EMP, let's be really super optimistic and say it only takes out 5% of the cars, you're going to have gridlock.
So you don't have an electric car, eh?
No, I have a good old-fashioned piston tire.
You're paid by big oil companies to
see. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, I'm endorsing that product.
Take a few more questions here for us. By the way, thank you for yours and great questions. Gary in Hawaii on the island of Kauai, west of the Rockies. Gary, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sure can, Gary. Thank you.
Okay, aloha. I got a question for William, and this is kind of an off-the-wall question. I don't even know why it went through my head, but it did. It has to do with the elevator cable.
Mm-hmm.
And if so, could, even though it's like a needle in a haystack kind of thing, if it's even possible, could a meteor shower prove possibly to be detrimental to that cable?
Great question, and dead on. There are various obstacles that we have to overcome when building a pillar, and one of them is a very good detection system to note an incoming event like that and either knock it out, or you can actually move the cable several hundred meters in one direction or another by just having some thruster units on it. And I'm glad this call is coming from Hawaii, because that actually figures in my novel, Pillar to the Sky, where the first cable goes up to the island nation of Kiribati, and then they string a cable from there to Hawaii to start providing electricity to Hawaii, limitless energy from the sun for free. But, yeah, we have to worry about space debris, as we saw in the movie Gravity, meteors, things like that. But these are challenges. I don't see them as insurmountable obstacles. They're challenges that will help generate new technology, not only protecting us against, you know, hitting on an elevator, but as at the start of George's show, they were talking about that asteroid that was the size of the Titanic came by, rather close. We have to protect ourselves from those type of things as well.
I got to congratulate you, William, on the work you've done with this. People like you and Bill Maloof, of course, critically important to getting the word out and, you know, maybe making somebody wake up so they can start working on this.
Oh, George, you've hit my major fantasy tonight, because I know you reach millions of folks. And if but one person picks up my book, Pillar to the Sky, reads it, and he happens to be a CEO of a company like Google and goes, that is good not only for business so they can make a profit, but it's good for all of humanity, and it can ensure a better world for our kids and grandkids.
Well, you know, the Amazon founder, Bezos, he should jump on something like that. I mean, this is chump change for him.
Quite a few of the dot-com guys, and in fact, that is the main character in my novel, is a dot-com billionaire who says, I'm going to build this as a legacy for our grandkids and to make the world a better place. You're right. It would be chump change for some of them.
We go to Bob in Elizabeth, New Jersey, east of the Rockies. Bob, good morning.
Good morning, George. William, thank you for taking my call.
You got it.
George, first I wanted to ask you a favor, if you could. Every time somebody refers to Google, would you please tell them to use Start Page? Google compiles too much information on us, and they don't need to know that.
Yep, you're okay, right. William. Catherine Albrecht, go ahead.
Yes, sir. William, I had a question about the space elevator. The cable that goes out there, it's held out by centrifugal force, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. How much weight would that be able to bear before it would be pulled out of the sky?
Good. That's an interesting question.
Oh, gosh. The math on that really gets to be a lot of fun. There would actually be a counterweight at the opposite end. The analogy, and when I show my students how this works, I actually take my shoe off, pull the shoestring out, and spin the thing around.
Could it be pulled down with a larger weight?
If you put too much weight on it in terms of ascent going up or descent going down, you could trigger some problems. Same thing with a suspension bridge. I mentioned it's famous for people who are into this. It's called Gallup and Gertie, which was a bridge that was lost out West Coast back in 1940 because of a windstorm, and it set up a harmonic that actually shook the bridge apart. You have to first lay the first stringer, and then you build that cable up across a span of several years that can finally sustain a significant weight. We're now talking into tons of weight that could be moving up and down every day. But also, I want to say hello to the caller because, hey, I grew up in Newark, and I believe he's from Elizabeth, which was right next door.
What a disaster, though, if they missed their calculations and the weight pulled that thing down.
Absolutely, yes. It's going to be a great challenge. But what the hell? We as Americans, we face challenges. Again, Jack Kennedy said we're going to go to the moon. The only rocket we had at that time had 1/50th the power needed to get us there.
I mean, would we be able to bring tonnage up there, or are we just talking about a couple hundred pounds?
Actually, once you have built that cable up, it can handle tons of material going up and down every day. And for me, the most exciting aspect of it is once you start putting solar panels up there, you're talking about gigawatts of energy that you're piping down through superconductivity cables. The great problem for harvesting energy in space in the past is that you can't beam it down, you can't microwave it or laser it. The environmental impact will be deadly. Once you have a hard cable, we have limitless energy in our future.
Well, that's so true. First-time caller, Todd, truck driving in Pennsylvania. Hi, Todd. Go ahead.
How are we doing tonight?
Good, Todd.
Gentlemen, thank you for taking my call. I was flipping through the radio stations a bit earlier, and I happened to hear you guys talking about this. I want to say it's very refreshing for once to be able to, with all the radio stations I listen to hear someone say something about a preemptive strike in reference to the, as you were saying, the rogue country.
Yeah.
It is, it's like a taboo that nobody wants to say anything about. Somebody thinks about it, but they don't want to say nothing because, everybody has to be so politically correct in today's society. It's like, I'm a truck driver. I'm pretty much, 8 years U.S. Army disabled vet. I'm about as politically correct as the tire I'm sitting on.
Amen.
Okay. But, I agree with that. I mean, yes, it is a horrible aspect, but what is the other side of the coin? As well, like you were saying, I mean, it's bad either way. Wars, I mean, something is horrible. I mean, a soldier is the first person who's going to pray for peace. But, there's times that you just can't do it. And people just don't want to talk about it. But that's the first guys that I've heard actually say anything about that. Because nobody says nothing about that on anything I've ever heard. And thank you for that.
Okay, you are very welcome. I'll let you react in the moments we have left, William.
Hey, we all went to school once. Remember the schoolyard bullies? They finally went away when we did a preemptive strike on them, which was a bunch of kids going up and saying, listen, if you touch one of us, you got a problem, and finally you have to thrash one, and then they left you alone. The world is the same. It's like a schoolyard. We got to convey the bullies. Don't even think about it.
Yeah, you have to. There's no question about that. And you got to do it in a way that they wake up, and they never, ever want to bully you again.
Exactly.
Ah, William, I don't know. It's going to be an interesting few years. I can feel it.
There'll also be some very exciting years ahead if we think positively, even as we prepare against the negative.
Michelle's in Niagara Falls. Go ahead, Michelle.
Yeah, one comment, one question. What would be good trades to have going into the future, like, you know, architecture or robotics or electrical? And the other comment I have is maybe the government does not want to address the grid issue, because my thinking is if they were going to unleash a biological weapons, that they don't, you know, the grid doesn't matter. And there was a psychic on the internet who said she saw a mass exodus of Americans out of the United States. Now, I don't know when, you know, it could be over the next 5-10 years, I don't know. But if she had a vision of that, then there's something major, and I'm thinking biological.
Well, all of that is possible. I mean, it really is. I would just like 5 years of calm, William, wouldn't you?
I'd like 6 months of calm.
Maybe so.
Just let my girl get out of college or get into her profession. Let's have some calm just for a little while.
I know.
Positive future. That's all we want.
You know what? I want a positive future for my grandchildren. I want them to be happy and successful and everything else. And it's just too many. You know what? It all comes down to greed. It comes down to greed and power and these idiots who are running nations. They just don't understand. They don't get it.
It's also lack of vision. You and I are about the same age, and when we grew up with Apollo space program and Star Trek and all that, we thought there was a positive future. We got to rebuild that for our kids, that space can be a positive future for us, that humanity is going to survive. It's going to be one heck of an interesting century ahead.
I think so, too. William, thanks again. It's two books, Pillar to the Sky, 1 Second After, his website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. More to come when we roll right back.